Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on the Everything app at jwright929. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial, you can still stream us on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen, stream anytime, anywhere. We're also streaming on iHeartRadio as well as TuneIn Radio. You can check out the live video streams over on YouTube, Twitch, and X, the Everything app. It is all happening on X. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. Another tight little six-hour day for my guy. Follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. How's it going?
Oh, it goes well, my friend. Let's welcome to the program. He writes about college football and basketball for CBS Sports. We found out today he might be getting some of that sweet, sweet Saudi cash or Qatari cash. Or I think there was one other wealth fund.
Is it UAE? Either way, he's getting into the oil money business.
Yeah, he's getting into the they fly jumbo jet business.
But Emirates airline business.
No.
Wait. Did Paramount acquire an airline? I'm confused.
So, it's probably unfair to say. Front Office Sports is reporting, which, by the way, this is kind of a no-duh. It turns out the proposal from Skydance for Paramount to buy Warner Brothers Discovery, it might have included investment fund money from, you know, a sovereign wealth fund overseas.
As long as the checks hit every other Friday, they can do what they want.
Gosh, Target, I had it linked.
Preach.
Let's see. I had it linked earlier because I know it was Saudi and Qatari. And the third is, Abu Dhabi.
Oh, come
that
on.
Was
we
a free space.
That. Yeah,
that's on us.
Yeah,
that's we got to be better than that, George.
That's right. Smack in the middle. That's yeah.
Like we were like Dubai, like, no.
Hand up. That's on us.
So
basically, I'm like DeChambeau. My paycheck comes from questionable places.
As long as you don't go strictly to YouTube after this, you know, I think you're all good there.
I mean, I guess technically no, because they're not funding you right now, and also they're really just funding the merger. So I think you could probably say your paycheck's clean. I don't like basically like they're going to pay for the price of Warner Brothers.
Are we just giving Cobb plausible deniability?
No, I actually am like trying to like think it through.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, if I could put it all on Cobb, yeah, for sure. Like Cobb is sports washing. We all know it.
Jeffrey, I think you missed your calling as like a media critic. Like you need to be Richard Deitch or like, you know,
that's
who's the
too
other
much
one?
Work.
I know, but like you follow it better than anybody.
Marshawn,
anybody I know.
Andrew Marshawn.
Yeah, you should be Marshawn or Deitch. Like you follow the media.
My buddy Glasspiegel does a good job. Yeah. They're way better than I am. They're way more talented.
Yeah,
they got deeper Rolodex. Like it's much
carve
more,
out a lane.
But also they have to play ball. I can just sit there and crack wise.
There's some real advantages to that.
Yes.
Like not being plugged in,
correct.
Not being sourced.
Correct.
Like you don't have to protect relationships.
You're not worried about what your phone you're not worried about the phone call you might get.
Yeah. Jeffrey Wright can tell it like it is.
Correct. I don't really have to worry about whether or not I'm sourced on a massive, massive story. So congratulations to Cobb. He's got sweet Saudi cash coming his way. That should be exciting. All right, wanted to start the program. So we had Harrington on Monday, and at the end of the show, or at the end of the segment, we were kind of discussing, you know, what would be, like, what is the way to stop Wimby? And he kind of like made the joke. He's like, maybe Zach Edey just needs to be like go full Clubber Lang and just like start thinking about Wimby at all times. Like, because he does physically present the opportunity maybe to defend him at least a little bit. And so he wrote about it in the mailbag. But then I started thinking about this because he got another question, so I wanted to piggyback off that. There was a subscriber that wrote in this, watching the Western Conference Finals, when you watch the Thunder and you watch the Spurs, like, it's inevitable. Like, they're going to dominate for the next 7 to 10 years. Essentially, the larger point would be, what is the point? And I'm more curious if all Grizzly fans feel that way, because I don't know what you and I talked about it this weekend, because we were together this weekend. I was really fired up for this series, and I've been very down on the playoffs in general. Like, I've not thought it's been a very good playoffs, and I don't really think that that is that hot of a take. But my God, Cobb, this series is like my favorite playoff series in basketball that I can remember. Probably, if like I set aside Grizzlies series and personal feelings, this might be my favorite series since the 2016 finals.
Oh, it's good. It's special.
This thing is different. Rocks.
Yeah, and it's just getting started too.
Like, I know.
It's gonna be, yeah, it's gonna be so good. Not to mention the Eastern Conference series is off to a compelling start as well. I mean, you talk about New York erasing a 20-point deficit in the
final.
Well,
the Cavs are cursed.
5 minutes. The what?
The Cavs are cursed.
They very well might be. They also have James Harden.
No.
Who's,
everyone's gonna learn. My guy Danhausen has cursed the Cavs, and like, it's going to become a storyline.
Really? What did he? How did he curse them?
So he's just been brought up to the WWE. He's been like an independent guy, and his characters, he describes it if Conan O'Brien were possessed by a demon, but he's kind of like a pure comic theatrical act for wrestling, and his big deal is he curses people. And before the series, he had cursed the New York Knicks, but you are allowed to pay off Danhausen. They paid him, and he took off the curse. And before the series, he cursed the Cavs. And that looked like a team that was cursed.
Did he curse anybody in the West?
He has not cursed anybody in the West, but he is available for hire. Okay. I don't want to go there.
That seems like a good hustle.
I don't want to go there yet, because this is the other thing I was thinking about. Like, is it depressing for Grizzlies fans? My view is no. I do understand the sentiment, which is, if you look at, like, let's say the, like, let's look at the Spurs. All right, how did the Spurs build this? Well, you get lottery luck in a one-player draft, and that one player might be the most generational player we've ever seen. He might be like someone that changes basketball. All right, well, that's not really that repeatable. You then get lottery luck again and get the two. And then in the Castle Edie draft, you might have at four drafted the best player. Okay, so some of that, I think you could chalk the Castle part up to maybe scouting and like a good decision. But like, I don't know really how repeatable that is. And then with the Thunder, well, I don't, like, the Grizzlies are never going to have the type of player to trade. And at a point in time when people were spending first round picks like they were second round picks, I don't know if you can ever recreate the Paul George trade. I understand that, but my whole thing is, from the Grizzlies' perspective, I'm not expecting this team to compete like with these two teams next year, maybe not even the next year. But like, when we start looking maybe 3 or 4 years, okay, and what we've also seen so far is nobody's figured out how to consistently in this CBA put together year after year after year, like the Bull, you know, the Jordan Bulls, LeBron is his own franchise, the Wars. We haven't seen anyone's been able to like put it all together like that. So I'm kind of just kicking my feet back and going, this thing rocks.
Well, there's a few things. right now the Grizzlies are at rock bottom. So if you're asking me, am I discouraged? Well, how could I be any more discouraged than where we've been the last 2 years? Like, so there's really nowhere to go but up for this Grizzlies franchise. Two, did you see the Bobby Marks piece yesterday? Tiering NBA franchises by their future assets.
Yeah.
Grizzlies land on tier one, not only for what they have in this draft, but for what they have in future drafts. Third point, it meshes with yours. At this point, my expectation isn't necessarily for the Grizzlies to go toe-to-toe with Oklahoma City or San Antonio. At this point, things have gotten so bad that a mere return to non-play-in playoffs would be like my goal. That's my goal.
Just being in the top six.
Right. Maybe at the height of our delusion over what the Ja, Jaren, Dez era was going to be, we would have turned our nose up at just merely being in the playoffs on a semi-regular basis. But by golly, now that sounds amazing. And then also, did we let the Warriors dynasty that transpired in large part in congruence with the core four era, did we let that detract from our joy over what those teams accomplished? No. So we still enjoyed the core four era, even though it only resulted in one Western Conference Finals appearance, and that was the zenith, right? But we still reflect on that as if it were, as if, you know, that's like our version of the like the mid to late 90s Yankees or something, you know, in Memphis.
Yeah. So I guess, though, the only pushback I would have to that last point, because you're 100% right, that didn't steal our joy. Now, a couple other things. One, that team was largely homegrown. I know they trade for, they acquire Tony, and then they trade for Zebo. But, like, those were our guys. I also think, though, that was an era where you were not in the same parity era that we were. Right now is more of a era of parity than that era was. So you kind of, there was like a built-in expectation of, like, you know, making it to the Western Conference Finals would be a hell of a thing. Whereas now everybody dreams bigger. But back to your previous point before that, I understand the bad vibes, depression, whatever, however you want to define it. If the core cause of your depression is, man, when we got these guys, Ja, Jaren, and Dez, like, you kind of thought, all right, man, we're looking at least like 10 years of this thing. And the fact that it ended so abruptly and so, honestly, unceremoniously, like, that I can go along with, because that felt like it was ripped away and you never even got to really experience the fruits of it. I mean, you get one playoff series win and then a whole lot of frustration. But I don't quite understand the depression when you watch this series, just because I think the timeline's so far off. You know what I mean? Like, if I thought that the Grizzlies were just this draft away, then I kind of get it. But it's like, no, you need this draft and you probably need one more and you're probably going to need a move here or there to really, like, push to the point where you're like, all right, it's go time, but I'm just not there yet. And then the other aspect of it is, like, you don't know what's to come with the Spurs and Thunder.
Well, eventually the Bills are going to come due for all their depth. I mean, like, they're going to be able to.
The Thunder are going to have to start making decisions this summer.
Yeah, they're going to be able to.
Now they have 58 draft picks, and I think they have guys stashed on their bench that would probably be starters elsewhere. But yeah, no, it's awesome. Great.
Yeah, so the Grizzlies' contention window of the next era isn't imminent. It is like, hey, if we could somehow get into the play-in next season, that'd be a big win. Probably feel the same way in 27-28, and then, okay, 2029 playoffs, we're there to go. And then it's to your point, like, what does Oklahoma City look like at that point? I feel really good about what San Antonio is going to look like. I mean, barring some catastrophic injury to Wimby, like, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. And I think Oklahoma City will be as well, but I don't think that's, are they going to be this dominant, this elite? It's going to depend on how they're able to maximize the value of some players whose contracts are going to be going through the roof here in the very near future.
Yeah, it's like, would I bet that the Thunder are here for a good long while? Yes. Have we seen anyone in this era really do it year after year? Like, the closest thing is Boston, and they get the advantage of the East.
Right. So it's like Chet, for example, goes from 13 mil this year to 41 mil next. You know, that's 28 million in salary that they don't have to deal with this year. That allows
and
them to
what's
have.
Do you have theirs in front of you? What does J Dub go to? God, I found myself doing it. I hate that. Is my new. I fell into the trap when everyone on TV, and I get it. You're trying to distinguish between two Jalen Williams, but when everyone does the J Dub and just expects you to know, that's now driving me insane.
Well, the good Jalen Williams goes from 6.5 mil to 41.
It's a bit of a jump. I mean, a bit of a jump.
And what's crazy is the other Jalen Williams actually makes more right now.
Yeah, he's older. Yeah.
So between between good Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren, you're looking at an additional 60 plus million in salary on the books for next season. So, but it, you know, if they continue to draft, they can replace the role players they're going to lose because of salary restrictions. But that's not a guarantee. Like, we think they'll continue to draft well, but you don't. That's not, it's not guaranteed. So, yeah, they're going to have the core in place. Like SGA under what? I think is he as well paid as possible? Is there anything he's missed out on in terms of Supermax or anything like that? Because he's going to be up at $68 million in 28-29.
I think that's the high of highs. I mean, I guess you could technically say, I think that's as high as it goes.
Yeah, the crazy thing too, though, just another feather in Sam Presti's cap, is that almost without exception, these guys are on team options. You don't go through here and find anybody on a player option. And the way they've been able to finagle that is insane, because it maximizes their flexibility. Like Isaiah Hartenstein, he's got a $28.5 million player or team option for next year. Lou Dort, he's got an $18 million team option for next year. Eventually, Isaiah Joe, Aaron Wiggins, lesser Jalen Williams, like, they're all going to have team options. So it's just, and the list goes on from there. So they have the ultimate amount of optionality, but they still got to hit the right buttons over the years.
You got to hit the right buttons. You got to stay healthy. I mean, like, there are a lot of ifs. I guess the other thing that I found myself last night thinking, you know, it's a great series because everyone is like kind of fighting with each other. And I'm not just talking about the players. So last night I saw Thunder fans getting bent out of shape that Tony Brothers was calling the game because they had done the tracking math, I guess. The Spurs were 7-0 in games officiated by Tony Brothers. The Thunder were only 3-2. And the fact that, like, Thunder fans think that they're going to just get a bad whistle, like, that's laugh out loud funny to me. And then on the flip side, you've got, man, I got to tell you, if you put together like a 45 second to like a minute and a half highlight video of SGA falling down and foul baiting on offense, I will watch it every time. Like, it is a 1,000% hit rate for me.
Oh, it's just, what else can you really even say about it? It's just the way he plays. He gets away with it. He gets rewarded for it. Why stop? Like, it's only going to become worse. Like, you could go to an AAU tournament right now. And the sad thing is, like, a generation ago, they were all trying to imitate Steph. Now it's like, sure, okay, there's still some Steph imitation out there in the world, but like, it's the throwing your head back, right? Like, to sell contact. Like, you see that even in like middle school basketball now. Like,
yeah,
guys.
And to be clear, he is not the only one. I'll tell you what it is for me. It's the going down to the ground. Mm. It's the leaving your feet every freaking time. And, like, is he the only one that does it? Absolutely not. Like, I'm not – I think it's an epidemic in the NBA more so than with him. It's just – I find it so funny.
Oh, I mean, and Chet is so – I mean, he is so flaily. I mean, I get it. Part of it's his frame. But, like, Wimby doesn't flail and flop the way that, that Chet does. And he's got the same build.
No, Chet – Chet doesn't feel as coordinated as Wimby.
He just he feels like he wants to be a victim at all times, you know? Chet's one of those guys where it's like if he's on your team, you love him and he's good, he's a great player, but he just feels like a dweeb sometimes. And I mean, whatever. Like
No, I know what you're saying. Like if he weren't tall, like, even though this is not true, it feels like this. If he weren't tall, he wouldn't be good at basketball.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's it seems obvious, but, I mean, you're not wrong.
But, it's not true. He is a highly skilled player. But there's something – I don't know. You're right. It just feels like he looks like you're watching one of those, like, inflatables at, like, a payday place that, like, is just trying to entice you to come in.
Wacky inflatable arm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That advanced financial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that, I think that's how Dundon made his money. I think he might have been offered some predatory loans. El Cheapo.
There's a couple Tennessee boosters who've gone down that route.
Did you see El Cheapo's taking the private equity playbook to the Blazers?
I got to do what you got to do.
Got rid of 70 people yesterday.
Layoffs, man. They're an epidemic right now.
It almost feels like, though, the league doesn't want to embrace it, but it's almost like he does, but the league's not letting him. Because, like, Silver's doing they're calling him cheap. I've seen no signs of that. Like, Adam, you want to follow up?
I mean, 70 people in an NBA organization. I mean, surely a lot of those are, like, seasonal part-timers, right? Like,
it was the reports that I read was primarily on the business side. So I think the Blazers like had a Grind City Media type operation. Because I saw like team reporters.
I did see some of that.
Which I've always laughed at the notion. Not that these people don't do good work, but like you are not a reporter if you work for the team.
Right.
Like that is, no, it's not the case. It's like, different to me than like activist journalists. Like, you are not a journalist if you're an activist.
That's a really hard one for people to understand.
Yeah, it's like you are an activist, and it doesn't mean that your job is meaningless. It's like you cannot be both.
We have those debates in our student newsroom, and the people who were journalism activists now work in politics, and it's like, thank you. That's where you needed to go.
Correct. Yeah. Like that's what it is. A couple of the other highlights from last night. I don't know how I feel about this. He's one of my all-time favorites. I don't really like that. I think Tirico might have gotten on Twitter for like the first time in a decade. Cause I felt like Tirico was subtweeting the hashtag haters during a lot of the broadcast. And I think the NBA falls into this trap more than anyone, and maybe it's because they're so motivated by social engagement. He acts as if like the entire world hates the Thunder. And like, I just don't think that's the case.
I think Mike Tirico's been, I'll say this, like, has he completely dialed in to like being the most prominent voice in terms of NBA play-by-play in this moment right now? Maybe not. Like I think he could still be better, but like I love having his voice.
Oh, he's the best.
Yeah, it just adds so much gravity to it. Like, and no shots or disrespect whatsoever to other great play-by-play guys who have been critical voices in the NBA over the years, but like because Mike Tirico transcends more than just NBA basketball, it makes his calls like it makes the games feel like more than just just NBA games. It feels like they're now events that appeal to like the wider sports world.
100%. Because like, let's take another guy that is universally beloved and thought of extremely highly, if even not necessarily by me, Mike Breen. I think there's something interesting about guys that are really only one sport guys on the national level. There's something about the fact that Tirico is in our homes on Sunday Night Football. Tirico's the voice of the Olympics. Tirico has been the premier voice of ABC, ESPN. I mean,
done
he's
Super Bowls.
Like, he's done it all. The fact that Breen's just an NBA guy, I do think that's always been maybe one of my hangups, is like, he feels like a New York big game voice, but I don't necessarily know if like he is like sports big game voice.
And then when you have Tirico, it's like he's narrating something of international significance, because that's what he does. He's the voice. He is the voice of the Olympics. He's such a well-known voice in the NFL. And so when you put him on your NBA coverage, it's just like, it gives it that air of significance that I don't feel like. And then not to mention like just the general nostalgia of those of us who were raised in the 90s, like seeing big time meaningful NBA basketball played on NBC. Like, I think those two, like his voice on that network with these games, like, criticize them all you want. Like, I don't care, but I think it's a really good mix. I think it's a really good formula to like make these broadcasts compelling.
I think they got to figure out the analyst chair.
I mean, it's Reggie, like Reggie Miller. Like, what do you want?
But see, it's Reggie and Jamal Crawford. They haven't quite figured out the chemistry. And Jamal doesn't quite have the energy. I also don't understand. Do you have any sense? Why does the NBA insist on a three-man booth?
It's a good point. Like, it worked well in the Final Four because the chemistry with, like, Grant Hill and Raf is so good. But I don't know. Like, it's a lot of, especially in this fast-paced era. I mean, the fourth quarter last night was so up and down, back and forth, made shot after made shot. Like, there's just not a lot of time within
like,
the flow
about,
of the
like,
game.
Even like this in the... In the NFL, CBS, two-man booth. NBC, two-man booth. Fox, two-man booth. ESPN, ABC, two-man booth. What? Football would lend itself to a three-person booth much more easily because you have play, break, and they could bounce off each other. With basketball and it being constant action, I just don't understand, but it only... I'm convinced it's coming from the NBA, but I don't know why they are insistent on it. I guess maybe it just gets another name.
I think the NBA's whole MO is like creating dialogue and conversation around its product. Like, I think that's it's a large part of its business model. And like you model that, you demonstrate that when you have a conversation transpiring, you have the debates that the NBA lives for, like transpiring in real time during the game. When you have two analysts who then go back at each other about whatever the situation is, whereas like you're not going to have a play-by-play guy going.
Yeah,
at
no, that's fair.
No, I think that's
part
of it.
That's an interesting thought. But then it's weird. They want the debate on their terms. But like when it becomes Van Gundy and Mark Jackson just being, you know, Waldorf and Stratford, the Muppets. Is it Waldorf and Stratford? I always mix Waldorf Astoria as the hotel. I think it's Stratford and Waldorf. I think that's right. But like when they're just doing the curmudgeon-y, like complaining thing, they don't like that. When Doris Burke is saying, he's a free throw merchant. They don't like that. Like, they, you are right that they, I think they like the constant conversation, but they want it to be.
They don't want it to be critical of the product.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Or they don't.
You can debate which player's the best or which player should be on the floor, or was that a good call or a bad call? Because I think on a certain level, the refereeing is fair game, right? But they don't want you, like, if you criticize Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the two-time MVP as a free throw merchant, and devalue the legitimacy of his game in front of the largest TV audience that you'll have all year, of course, like, Adam Silver and the league execs are going to, they're going to shy away from promoting that sort of debate. But if the debate is over, you know, like, oh, should they have Alex Caruso guarding Wemby? And then you get in a back and forth about that. That's the debate that they want.
Yeah. Should the, you know, should they still go small, you know, or should they bring Hartenstein in and whatnot? Also, maybe number one, tell your story of the playoffs, SGA saying he didn't understand the question on the post-game interview when they were asking Hartenstein, like, it was it the fix? Like, I don't know if it worked. So what's, like, he answered the question immediately and he answered it exactly. And now we're doing the, oh, that's not what I meant. Like, he should have gone with, I was just joking. He should have gone with JK, LOL. Like, and then I gave the real answer.
He's so dry, though. Like, he's so
dry. I think that's what that would have worked out perfectly. He could have done the, yeah, I'm dry. Like, I have a sarcastic sense of humor.
But made, like, it a Kawhi thing.
You can't do the, I didn't hear the question, when you literally, when it sounded exactly like question, answer.
Well, did he really think that Isaiah Hartenstein wasn't effective? Like,
I'd help him out. I don't think they shut Wemby down. What I do think Hartenstein, the key difference that he made was they got out-rebounded by 21 in game one. They got out-rebounded by 4 last night. That felt to me like the most significant number, and I think that is 100% related to Hartenstein, because Hartenstein is a significantly better rebounder than what they offer.
Yeah, and, like, Caruso was a plus 18 versus Hartenstein's plus 2, but a lot of that had to do with the fact that Alex Caruso actually made shots.
Yeah.
So like, I don't think you could look at the way they defended.
And Caruso got way more minutes. Like, that's the other, we can just look at one number. There's only one number that matters. How many minutes is Wemby playing? Because when Wimby's on the floor, the Spurs are winning. When Wemby's off the floor, the Spurs are losing, and significantly.
Yeah, I do think he was a little fatigued last night.
Oh, I made the joke of the night. You know, Tour de France season's coming up. We should let Wemby blood dope these playoffs.
Oh, my gosh.
Just give him more. Just give him more, you know, give him a little bit more energy. But there's,
just make him, just turn the, what, who could be the best player of this generation into an all-timer.
Yeah. Like, let's see. You know. Or maybe, like, let even the Thunder, that everybody could designate one player to blood dope.
How big would Lou Dort get?
Like, would they go with Dort, or would they go with...
Dort's already big, but, and, like, they just might make him the Hulk.
And then the other thing that would be interesting is, like, the Thunder would probably try to turn it into a negotiation of, rather than allowing one player to blood dope, like, can we let Jalen Williams take HGH to try and improve that hammy?
That would be helpful.
Like, that's the other question. Like, that's, so now with the Spurs, because this is the thing that is becoming very obvious. They have the best player on the floor, but my God, Cobb. I mean, they're making Tiger basketball teams look like they can take care of the basketball. And when you consider the skill level of an NBA player versus a college basketball player, 21 turnovers. Like, there was one possession at the end of the first half that it was perfect. They turned it over twice because at first, like, they almost got the basketball back, but they're like, no, we got to make sure we get this turnover in, and just turned it right back over. And it's becoming a problem. And it's like, so if they don't get, because I always was skeptical when they went a little too football guy, or maybe the reporters went a little too football-y. If De'Aaron Fox was going to sit out game one and then 24 hours or whatever, 36 hours later, be good to go for game two, I got real questions about how hurt he was. And now I think we're at the point where, yeah, no, it's pretty obvious, because De'Aaron Fox doesn't strike me as a guy that is going to nurse an injury. He strikes me as the guy that wants to be on the floor. Without him, man, they got a real problem.
Well, but, you know, it's the injury thing is it's a factor for both sides. I mean, with this Jalen Williams situation now.
Oh, 100%. I think, though, it's a bigger issue because they don't have a pure point guard right now.
Well, Stephen Castle was 2 assists and 1 turnover away from a triple-double.
Well, he had one on game one.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
Well, he had a 17-11-11 in game one. I think it was was it 17 points, 11 boards, and 11 turnovers?
It was 11 assists. Remember, it was a 1-1.
Oh, yeah, he had a 1-1 assist to turnover ratio.
Yeah, like, but on a certain level.
But my God, that dunk.
Like, I think you just live with, okay, this is the cost of doing business with the way Oklahoma City's going to guard. Like, I do think.
But you can't let, like, 21 turnovers, 27 points. Like, you can't. The problem is for them, it's the live ball turnovers. Like, they are just, it is just leading to dunks.
Well, and there was a 10-shot differential between the teams. Like, Oklahoma City got off 94 shots. San Antonio got off 84 shots. Well, lo and behold, there was an 11-turnover difference, a 12-turnover difference. 12-turnover difference and a 10 differential in shots. But to get Wimby the ball, like, where he wants the ball, you're going to have such a high, like, field goal percentage that it's like you almost just have to like live with. Like, I'm not saying you don't cut back. Like, you can't expect to win the NBA Finals committing 21 turnovers a game, but like it, Oklahoma City, to their credit, is making it hard for them to do what they want to do offensively. San Antonio is determined to do it anyway.
Yeah, but I guess the way that I look at it is you've covered him because we've been joking. I love Castle, but you and I both know he didn't take care of the basketball at UConn.
Well, he's not a natural point guard, and that's where it's like, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. Like, you got to get De'Aaron Fox back. Like, I don't disagree with that, but at the same time, like, Dylan Harper and Stephen Castle are still good. They're good ball handlers. It's just clearly Stephen Castle's got a little bit of a turnover issue.
Bit of a turnover issue. And then with Castle, I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, am I really supposed to believe that if you popped your hammy last night, like, you'll be good with some ice and Advil on Saturday? Or no, they're Friday,
hammies,
right?
Hammies are weird. Hammies are weird.
They're not fast.
They
take a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would say of those two injuries, the Jalen Williams one to me has a bigger impact on like what's going to happen in terms of who's going to win the NBA Finals. Like, I think without him or with a very hobbled version of him, like, Oklahoma City is significantly less dangerous. Whereas, like, on a certain level, it feels like in this series, San Antonio is playing with house money. Like, we've already seen them win a game without De'Aaron Fox. So, like, who's to say they couldn't win more? But Oklahoma City, it's like, if they don't have Jalen Williams, I don't know. Yeah, how do you power rank, you know, his spot on their roster? Is he their second best player? I think you can make that argument. So
I think he's clearly their second best player when healthy. I don't know if, like, this hobbled form, like, even before last night when he re-injures it and leaves the floor, like, game one and what we saw early last night, I mean, I give him credit for gutting it out. Like, that's a guy that's trying to give it a go. But that level of him is not a difference maker.
No.
I mean, honestly, right now, I'm at the point where I'm thinking, like, is Caruso their second best player in the playoffs?
I got to see him make shots consistently, like, before I...
No, George and I talked about it. He's Kurt Schilling. You throw it out. Yeah. Like, his regular season numbers, like, if he has an open three, he is hitting it in the playoffs. Like, he's that guy. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, over at CBS Sports, they have power ranked the biggest college football storylines heading into the season. Let's talk about that next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Over at CBSSports.com, Cobb's colleague Chip Patterson Now that we are 100 days out from the start of college football, he's got a column up about the 100 biggest storylines heading into the season. Number one, he starts with Lane Kiffin as the lightning rod of college football for 2026. I think you can just say Lane Kiffin is a storyline for 2026. Cobb, I don't know how you feel, because we actually went, let's see, you and I were together basically 72 hours this weekend. We talked,
won a golf tournament.
What is the official name of it? I named it. It was the Cobb Cup.
Sure. That, I mean, I've basically been the champion for three consecutive years. So that's,
we were champions of the Cobb Cup. We talked a little about the Tennessee fan base's mood towards Danny White. But we did not. Did we go an entire weekend without talking about Lane Kiffin?
Oh, I'm sure he came up, right? Like, there's no way. Like, he didn't come up at all. My man's going to Oxford and Knoxville in the same season. I mean, for crying out loud.
We
like,
were.
What? Like.
I think you and I did not talk about it, because I've decided I'm not removing myself from Lane Kiffin discourse. I'm removing myself from the Lane Kiffin take ecosystem. The reaction to Lane Kiffin is like, I'm just kind of done with it. And is that because maybe my wife is an Ole Miss fan? Maybe. Because I'm at the point like where she's doing the Why Are You Obsessed With Us, like the Mean Girls gif. And I was like, I've been telling her all along, this is what you signed up for when you got into Lane Kiffin business. It's never going to end well. And that was a hell of a 6-year run. You want to trade any of that? Because my guess is no.
No, not a lot. I mean, we've been doing the Lane Kiffin thing for going on 20 years now. When you go back to the way things ended in Oakland. And then, I mean, so it's just like, at this point, it's like some people are experiencing it for the first time.
Yeah.
But like, I was a Tennessee fan in 2009. Like, that was before I went there.
Yeah.
You know, it was before I started covering Tennessee. I was a Tennessee fan. Right. So like, I've done this. And it's funny to me to see people being like duped or roped in kind of for the first time over this past year. Cause it's like, man, this is who he's always been. But I will say in 26, it's going to go to new levels. I mean, that trip to Oxford. Okay, because think about it like this. Like, years had passed by the time he came back to Tennessee. And when the first time he came back, he was Alabama's offensive coordinator.
Yep.
The shine had been removed because things had not gone the way he had hoped at USC. He wasn't the head coach. Nick Saban was villain number one, head coach of Alabama. Yeah, Lane Kiffin was there. Yeah, like, you know, I was on the field that night and like I heard some of the things people said to him, but like there were no that night anyway. What was that? 2013. There were no mustard bottles thrown that night. He was a secondary figure.
14.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know what's the rotation for Tennessee and Bama? Does Vols fans in even years?
You're at Bryant Denny in the odd and at Neyland.
So 2014 was his first. Yes. Yeah, so he would have been, that was 2014.
Like, you know, my buddy who was the assistant sports editor, like he grabbed Kiffin's Propel bottle when he left it on the stanchion, the goalpost thing. And that was a souvenir that we kept in the Daily Beacon office for a while. But anyway, it's basically like him going back to Ole Miss is going to be, I don't think we've ever seen anything like, the only comparison that I can come up with is Chris Beard going back to Lubbock as the head coach of Texas.
That's a great pull, because the only one that I could think of from the Ole Miss perspective, when Tuberville left for Auburn, but their first game, the first time they played him was at Auburn. So by the time he'd come back, you know, 18 months, that's a good pull with that scene in Lubbock that night where they're rocking the bus and everything, like, That's probably a good comp, but there's also the, man, it's college football versus college basketball. Not that those weren't fans that weren't passionate, didn't care, but it's just a bigger thing in college football.
Yeah, so in that environment, like, he had to have multiple, like, Chris Beard had to have multiple, like, police, armed people, whatever, like around him. You know, it was, I will say this, like it's an indoor facility. So it's very much like they're on top of you a little bit more than they will be in Vaught Hemingway. But I'm super interested to see like how is Ole Miss going to prepare for this? Because on the one hand, like you want,
are you saying Ole Miss, the school, like the city of, like,
not the team. I mean, you know, Pete's going to say the right things all weekend. Is, oh, it's not about them, it's about us and the next team up and blah blah blah. You know, whatever. We all know what that's going to be. But like, I'm talking about like the administration, the campus police.
Oh,
the
I think I'll say this. I feel confident in saying that they are going to do everything in their power. But this could be, you know, you're the 300 mighty Spartans and you got a whole army of Persians on the other end.
I mean, it's going to be nasty. And I frankly, I don't blame Ole Miss fans. Like, I don't blame them. Now, on a certain level, it's like, okay, but, you know, is Lane Kiffin going to have to wear like full on like a bulletproof vest? Like what is this going to be, man? Because it's going to go so far beyond anything we've ever seen in college football, like, and to an extent where I'm not trying to be like some alarmist or whatever, but like if I were Lane Kiffin, I would be afraid for my safety. I would be afraid for my safety.
I'm trying to think of like the ugliest scenes I can ever think of in Oxford. So George, you may not remember, but in 07, I think it's Orgeron's last year, Ole Miss was playing Alabama, and they had a couple of like calls go against them. There was a bunch of stuff thrown that game.
Yeah.
But that was also like, Ole Miss was like, the Orgeron era, like they were, there was a lot of apathy.
Yeah, they weren't what they've become.
I don't have a great reference for you, Cobb, in terms of like what to expect, because the game's also going to be at 6:30. So
yeah, we'll be pretty limbered up,
and they're going to game day's going to be there. So
assuming Ole Miss beat Louisville, like Ole Miss is going to be a top 15 team.
I mean, they're both likely to be undefeated, and it'll be a top whatever.
I think they might need to just go like full on. You know, a few years back in baseball, they extended the netting like basically all the way down,
yeah,
like well past the dugouts. Like, I almost wonder if you don't just go like full field netting, because if it's a close game in the fourth quarter and some calls go again, I mean, Tennessee showed us like what this is, right? Like at that point, whenever he was back in Knoxville with Ole Miss, I mean, well over a decade had passed since he had been at Tennessee, yet Tennessee fans still hated him so much that when calls went against Tennessee, you know, they threw golf balls and mustard bottles. Well, we're talking about less than a year calendar wise, like really, you know, so, and you went directly to a big rival, right? So it's like after doing all the things he had done and saying all the things he had said, and now he's just adding to it. Like, that's the insane part about it, man. Like when is enough with you, man? Like, you got to start doing all this stuff now about, oh, well, you know, certain players don't want to come and play at Ole Miss because of the history there. And it's like, man, like, do you have any idea? Like, as I'm sure you've discussed, it's like, does he have any idea where the LSU Tigers nickname originated? Like, it's the same thing. Louisiana has a similar history, right? And it's like, all right, maybe if you were at, I don't know, Michigan or something, like this would be a more valid talking point. But like, you've literally just relocated within the exact same geographic region that has the same, all the same issues. So like
being at an SEC school and playing the moral police on race relations is a bold strategy. I think
it doesn't matter where they're all the
correct.
Same.
I think we can all agree on that. I think the other, I was trying to though, isn't the Tennessee student section, it's in that corner, but isn't it still on the visitor sideline?
Yeah.
So the one thing that helps Ole Miss, the students are in the south or the north end zone. So Because I still think most trouble, it doesn't mean all of it, but most trouble usually comes from the students.
Yeah.
Usually the people that are sitting in the sideline seats, like there's usually a little bit more decorum. I don't know if I would sit there and go like, I'm fearful of his safety because like.
But you know he wants to be the victim. I think
if you told me he wore a bulletproof vest, I would believe it just because he's Kiffin.
Exactly. Like I think this is what he wants. Like he's trying to create the conditions so that something crazy will happen. You know, because look, like 98% of Ole Miss fans, they're just gonna like yell, you know, screw you, Kiffin, blah blah blah, and then they're gonna watch the game and they'll. You know, they'll have a good time. They'll go home. Right. But, you know, whatever. Every fan base has their 2% or their 1% or their 0.5% or whatever. And like if somebody from that small contingent does something totally unhinged.
Well, even if it's 1%, that's still like 65 or 650 people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and we're not even talking about like with Neyland, like if it's 1%, we're talking about over 1,000 people. Like. That is right. Like think about that mass of humanity if you just saw it in a street.
Oh, I know. So I especially with it being so early in the season, it's like you almost would hope that Ole Miss would have like multiple home games to sort of like rehearse the
and it's even worse, situation. George, isn't you it? Know? So they start in Nashville.
Yep.
And is it Charlotte?
It's either Charlotte or some other
Wofford or what?
Exactly.
Who's Charlotte, some other it's Charlotte, and that'll be Charlotte? Like a noon game. You know.
Oh yeah, that's
that smells like SEC Plus.
Uh huh.
You know what I mean? Like so. Oh, yeah. Like we're really talking the first, like real game.
But having said all that, like I cannot wait. Like it's going to be must see TV, and it's what makes college sports special, right? Like you do not get this.
I don't even think we have to use the college qualifier. Why does this look at the Western Conference Finals? Why is this like you can't take your eyes off? It's like it's not like these two teams have years and years and years of history, but they clearly hate each other. And it's awesome.
But like it goes to even another extreme in the SEC in particular.
That's what I'm saying. Like, but I would argue.